One of you, it is an honor to be with you this morning. I've looked forward to this opportunity. What a great church and what a great Lord's Day opportunity to study God's Word together. We'll be studying in this hour out of the book of Proverbs in a few minutes, and we'll have a lot of those passages up on the screen, but if you want to be turning there, when we think about stronger relationships begin with God, let me tell you kind of where I was thinking as I thought through this, and then we'll back up and say some things about Fried Hardeman, and then we'll dive into the day of our study together. You know, sometimes we, for good reason, we think we're taking the high road when we say, you know, if I'm really going to work on relationships, I'm not going to work on you because I can't change you. So I'm going to work on me. And because we are the ones that can change us. Nobody else can. And in a relationship, we're the only ones that we have the power over is ourself. And so if we said strong relationships begin with me, that would be like a counselor's mindset from a human philosophy. You can work on you. But the challenge with that is it leaves God out of the picture. And if we are truly going to work on stronger relationships as Christians, the first place we start is God. And God changes us. He makes us a new creation. He changes our perspective. And He gives us a different approach as we share in all relationships. And so we'll talk about that from three different, very, very different angles today. And the first one we'll talk about is the idea of what if we stop and we allow God to instruct us as we share in relationships with others. And so we'll be diving into that in a few minutes. I love the opportunity to be with you. I appreciate the kind introduction. I appreciate the Sproles so much. And the Jenkins, you guys just have an amazing staff here. And even your newest intern that's just come on board this week. What a great, great staff that you have. I bring you greetings from Fried Hardeman University. We're just a few miles north of you in West Tennessee between Nashville and Memphis, Tennessee. And we have been doing higher education there on the very same address. Are you ready? Since 1869. We just finished our 153rd year of academic studies there. And so of the 13 or 14 institutions associated with higher learning that are associated with the Churches of Christ, we are the oldest. And so the best way to describe us, if we're going to use brevity, just two words, Christian education. Our mission is to help students develop their God-given talents for His glory. They want to be an accountant, how can they do it for His glory? They want to be a medical doctor, how can they do it for His glory? They want to be an attorney, CPA, a nurse, whatever it may be, how can they do it for His glory? We want to help them develop that. And so we're going to do that through education. We're going to integrate three things on a daily basis in that education. And it's going to be strengthening their Christian faith, their scholarship, and their service to God. And so we see that Christian faith exercise on a daily basis, whether it's every faculty and academic staff being faithful members of the Lord's church. Over 80% of our enrollment are members of the Lord's church. We see it in daily chapels where we come together to study God's Word, but also to share in life together. But we also see it as they leave campus. During spring break this year, these are the four countries and about eight different places across the United States that students chose to organize trips themselves to go on mission trips over spring break. Our mission trips are student-led, 99% of them are. And they organize their flights, they organize working with the church that they're going to go to and what they're going to do, and the student leadership that's developed is absolutely amazing. And so you see the four countries there, but then did you notice all across America, from California to Oregon to Vermont, North New York, Northern Upstate New York, couple of places, two different groups came to Florida. It's really amazing the good that takes place in the life of service. We see it locally as well as our students go out and serve in the community. We see it in scholarship. You know, there's one time out of the year we press pause. We don't have classes during that day, and students report on what they've been doing research on. And so this past year, we had 13 research posters presented. We had about 40 presentations of students and just a few faculty presenting on what they had been doing research on. And where does all of this lead to? I'm going to turn back a minute so you won't miss this. I don't want you to miss this point. Any mission that touches eternity demands to be done with excellence. And so everything we strive to do with excellence. And so someone makes a bad mistake when they think, oh, if I choose a Christian college like Fried Hardeman, I'm going to give up some of the excellence in academics. And it's just not true. Instead, you can get a leg up on academics. I want to show you some very real examples. The CPA pass exam rate for the state of Tennessee this year, this is this year's reports of those that had a master's degree when they took it. You'll notice that Fried Hardeman University is just behind Vanderbilt University. And you can read down the list there. That includes all of the UT systems. That includes all of the other schools. And when we say our College of Business is thriving, our College of Business can compete with anyone's College of Business. Our medical pre-med majors, pre-pharmacy majors, these seven students here, one is an instructor there that graduated from Fried Hardeman and then graduated his terminal degree from Vanderbilt. He is teaching with us now. He leads our undergraduate research. The reason that's so important is for students that want to get accepted into med schools, they need undergraduate research. And so those students are on campus now during summer break, and they'll go into the lab and they'll work all day. Because five of them plan on next year being in med school and two plan on being in pharmacy school. And our acceptance rates for most graduate programs are 98, 99, 100%. Our acceptance rate into med school is right at 90%. The national average is in the 70s. Our acceptance rate into veterinarian school is 90%. The national average is in the 60s. So again, if someone has high expectations, their dreams are high, we can be the best route for them in order to achieve whatever their dreams are. Our data analytics team last year went to the Washington, D.C. Data Fest, and they competed there, and they won it. This year, that same competition was held in Chicago. They went to it, and they won it as well. The Hatchet investment team, these students invest an actual $1 million. It's real. As a matter of fact, the era is pointing to one of our younger alums, and he supplies the $1 million. And they invest, and it is amazing the opportunities they have to learn. They outperform the market almost every year. They invest like the Russell 2000 fund. I don't have time to tell you the whole story on this, so let me just jump down. We have one of our commissioners and governor-appointed commissioners in the state of Tennessee in the Department of Financial Institutions visited campus, and I wish I had time to tell you all the things he said that day as he literally was blown away by what he saw. But here in the bottom right-hand corner is Courtney Middleton, and Courtney Middleton this past summer did an internship in Wall Street. She worked at J.P. Morgan, and there were between 100 and 200 interns that she worked around. She was the only one that was not from an Ivy League school. And she had already served as the fund manager of this fund, and very few of her peers around her, even from Ivy League schools, had ever managed $1 million while they were in college. And so the opportunities that they're getting are amazing. Our students, almost all of them graduate in either four and a half, the most 5 years, and they graduate with an undergraduate degree in business and a master's, an MBA. As they graduate, several already have. We provide opportunities for them to study for the CPA while they're in college. They're ready, well on their way, ready to take the first part of the CPA. We actually are one of the only colleges in the state of Tennessee that offer the CFA prep. And we actually have a few students, now they have to be really aggressive, but we have a few students that graduate with their first level of the CFA already passed. And most people, not many people have that, but the ones that do are usually in their mid-20s by the time they're taking it. We had a young man that graduated a year before last. He graduated in 4 years with an MBA. He had his first level of CFA, and he graduated mid-May, started his job immediately out of college, well over six figures. And so we're thankful for the good that is being done. Most people wouldn't think about coming to West Tennessee to see the world, but this is just a few of the study abroad opportunities that are taking place. We have students right now that are on study abroad, but the one I want to share with you, the newest one we have, is an archaeological dig. We have about 10 that are in the Graduate School of Theology right now, and they are literally on this site today. And this is where, this is Shiloh. This is where the tabernacle was. And so they are searching for evidence of the tabernacle literally today. It's pretty awesome, all the opportunities that students have to travel the world. And God has blessed us richly with parents and with students that want this kind of place where they can come and grow in their faith and yet excel in whatever their academic dreams may be. And so all of these are records coming into our spring semester. We've had 5 years of enrollment records being broken. We have almost 2,300 students from about 34 states and 25 countries. And the fun takes place. We have the majority of our students come to us as teenagers and they leave as young adults. And so we embrace that idea of the excitement of youth. And our social clubs are very, very active. And our young people continually remind us year after year just how talented they really are. This is last year's, not this year, this is last year's Mr. and Miss FHU. And the reason I put that on the screen for you guys is Miss FHU there, she is from Florida and just an amazing young woman. I think she's from Davenport, Florida. And then this is this year's, and she is from Alabama and he is from Kentucky. And just amazing young people. That's the same young lady there, Catherine Crabb. She also won the highest athletic award that is given at Fried Hardeman University, Heart of the Lion. She's an amazing softball player, such a faithful Christian young lady. We have 15 teams. These four teams went all the way to the national level, national tournaments this year, had an amazing run. Our guys in basketball went to the Final Eight. And I put this picture in here. If you know Fried Hardeman, it means a lot to you. If you don't, let me tell you what the reason I put this here. During Interface, when only the freshmen are on campus for a couple of days, our students always go and float the Buffalo River. And so this is a picture of five of them that was taken this past August floating the Buffalo River. And the reason I love that picture is there's a real good chance that none of them knew each other 24 hours before that. And what's neat is that Fried Hardeman takes place. And I love this picture to represent this story because it's kind of a blur. There's so many good things that happen spiritually and academically and socially, relationally. And then, in the blink of an eye, it's time to graduate. You say, that's exciting. It is, but also it's kind of sad because people that have become close as brothers and sisters to you are now no longer sharing the room, the suite, or the hallway with you. And it's like family is breaking up. But what's neat is that they'll stay on each other's text threads until they're old people like me. And it's pretty neat to see how that relationship, the Fried Hardeman experience, never ends. Listen, for a lot of people, college is a four-year experience. For Fried Hardeman, it is an experience that goes through us with eternity, toward eternity. Hey, this is just a picture about half of our campus. We would love for you to come and be with us. By the way, those of you that haven't been there in a while, you're like, I don't remember that oval there. I'll give you a hint. We call that the Bader Oval. So now you see what's missing. The Bader Gymnasium used to be there. But hey, come and visit us. Mid-South Youth Camp has one-week sessions for elementary, middle school, and high school. And we have kids from all over the U.S. come to it. There's 8 one-week sessions, June and July. So they'll be starting up soon. Go online and register for those. And send your kids, your grandkids there. Also, Horizons is the first week in July. We have to cap it at 975 students, so we always turn campers away. So jump in that early and come and be a part. That's junior high and high school. It's an amazing week also on campus. The theme this year is still, and us trying to find the presence of God in our stillness. And then this is last year's lectureship. Theme this coming year is going to be on the book of Revelation and the victory we have through Jesus. And so if you haven't been, I know some of you come all the time, but if you haven't been, it's the first week in July. There'll be over 125 sessions, and it's still probably the second largest lectureship in the brotherhood, literally around the world. And so it's an amazing time together. We have men's and women's sessions and children and teenagers. There's just all kind of powerful and wonderful opportunities that week. And so come and be a part of that week with us. Let's think about leaning on His wisdom. Have you ever thought about maybe why people don't like you? That's a pretty bold statement for a guest to say to a church family, right? So Don't want to be abrasive, but just think with me for a moment. Why is it that there are people that a lot of people don't like? Maybe you have a friend that's like that. And every time you're around that friend, they're telling you about some other situation they're in. You know, like you have lunch with them this week, and they're like, oh, my family's driving me crazy. I'm just in the worst family. And then the next time you're with them, they're like, my work. I work around the worst coworkers in the world. And then the next time you're around them, they say, oh, our neighbors. You won't believe the guy that lives on the right of us. You wouldn't believe what he did yesterday. And, you know, before long, you have to call time out and say, you know, I see a common denominator in all these stories, and it's you. You know, we have to own the fact that every day we make decisions in how we interact with others. And we can either make decisions that are wise and they build strong relationships, or we can make decisions that are foolish and they constantly chip away at relationships. Now, when I use wise and foolish here, I want you to know that I'm using it in the way that the Bible would use it, in the way God would teach it. In other words, from an earthly standpoint, we sometimes equate wisdom with just living life for a while. And so if you're older, you're just naturally wiser. And I want you to know that the Bible would not back that up at all. In other words, there's a lot of old fools. Living a long time has nothing to do with whether or not you're wise. We're talking about James, the third chapter. Read the last half of the chapter, and he breaks down very precisely that there is a wisdom from above and the beauty that it gives us in living a peaceful and good life with others. Or we cannot seek wisdom from above and just pull from earthly experiences and just life. And the two lives will look totally different. Now, the beauty of wisdom itself, as we look especially in the book of Proverbs, is that the book of Proverbs is written in short, pithy sayings. It's written in a way that each of them not only shares a thought, usually about something very practical in life, but usually it shares a thought that provokes other thoughts. In other words, when you read the first chapter of Proverbs and the first paragraph of Proverbs, what we learn is that we have to learn how to learn to read Proverbs. And so if you spend a lot of time in Proverbs, you've already forgotten that. You have forgotten that when you first started reading Proverbs, you would read a Proverbs and you would say to yourself, I don't really get what that means. But then after you start spending time regularly in Proverbs, you read Proverbs and they make so much sense that it just clicks. You're like, oh, dealt with that yesterday. Yes, I know what's coming up this week and I'm going to be dealing with that one. And so it's just the opportunity to have continual guidance. I want to pause here and I want to tell you a story just on the lighter side. It's not a perfect example of godly wisdom. I just want you to see and appreciate the idea that when wisdom is present, you have to have that aha moment. I love the story. It's cheesy, all right? I love the story about the barber who is cutting hair in a little country town, and he looks through the window, and he sees a little boy approaching his barber shop, and he interrupts all the customers that are visiting with each other, and he says, guys, watch this. The dumbest kid in town is about to walk in the door. Watch this. And so the little boy walks in, and he greets everyone and speaks to them in a kind manner, and while he's doing that, the barber is turning back to his cash drawer, and he's getting two quarters in one hand and a dollar bill in the other hand. He says, son, come here. Which hand will you choose today? And the little boy walks over and he takes the two quarters. He says, thank you, sir. He tells everyone goodbye and he walks out the door. As the door closes, the barber chimes in again. See, guys, told you, dumbest kid in town. He chooses two quarters over a dollar every day. Well, one of the guys finished up getting his hair cut and he was walking back through town. He saw a little boy licking on an ice cream cone. And so he went over, he said, son, curiosity kills the cat. I've got to ask you, why do you take two quarters over a dollar every day? The little boy smiled real big. And he took another lick on his ice cream cone. He said, mister, the day I take the dollar, the game's over. Isn't it amazing? When you see wisdom and you get it, you're like, wow. Now listen, you and I deal with things every day. Every day. That we have the opportunity to respond in a wise way that no one else would think about. But the only reason we think about it is because we're not using our own thinking. We've learned wisdom from above. You want to build stronger relationships. It doesn't begin with you. How much life experience can you get? You can do foolish things over and over and over. If you want to build stronger relationships, it begins with God. God, I want you to teach me how to interact with my spouse, with my children, with my parents, with my grandchildren. God, I want you to teach me how to interact with the folks at work, and especially that one person that is so difficult to get along with. God, I want you to teach me how to live with my church family. I want you to teach me how to live with all the neighbors on my street or in my apartment building, even the ones that are very, very difficult to live around. Listen, life changes completely whenever we stop directing our lives. We own the teaching in Scripture that if we direct our life, it leads to destruction. And instead, we'll allow God to direct our lives. And so if we look in the book of Proverbs, let's spend some time and let's think about some things we could learn about if we do these things, it could be a reason why we are not contributing strong relationships, we're actually eroding strong relationships. Number one, are you a loner? A man who isolates himself, this is Proverbs 18 and verse 1, Proverbs 18 and verse 1. A man who isolates himself seeks his own desire. He rages against all, what? Wise judgment. Now notice, whatever the first part of this is, the proverb writer says, if you do this, you're not just not doing something wise, you're raging against wisdom. In other words, you're saying, I don't want to be wise. Judgment, I could make a good decision here, but I don't want to. Okay, so what is it the proverb writer would say? If you do this, you're raging against wise judgment. He says, go out and live a life in isolation. Now, lest someone says, but now wait a minute. I'm an introvert by nature. He's not talking about introvert, extrovert here. And you say, well, how do we know? Well, read the first phrase again. Who's he talking about here? I'll read it with emphasis. A man who isolates himself seeks his own desire. What he's doing here is he is teaching us about selfish people. Do you realize that you get to control your schedule? And if you want to do everything you want to do when you want to do it, what you do is you isolate yourself. Do you realize you don't ever have to help anybody else pack a moving truck again? When that announcement is made, hey, Saturday morning, the such-such family's leaving and they could use some help packing, and you're sitting there thinking, Saturday morning is my time. Isolate myself. Don't want those relationships. I like to do things. You realize Thursday evening, you can have every Thursday evening, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday evening. Why go to a 50th anniversary? It's your time. Don't invest in others. Why go to somebody's wedding? Why go to a funeral? They're already dead. Why give of yourself to help someone who's doing something or someone who has need? I want you to imagine that in your circle right now, think about someone, their child has an accident, and they've got to run to the emergency room to get stitches, and they need somewhere to drop the three-year-old off for, well, you don't know how long, right? Because you never know how long it's going to take to the emergency room. So my question to you is, would your friends call you? Who are you going to call? You're going to call the friend that you know you can count on. And some people, you're not going to call because you're going to be like, they don't like for their time to get interrupted. And so you're going to call the one who's learned from this verse. Sure, we can put on hold what we're doing. You bring that baby over. We'll take care of them. And if we need to come to your house and put them in bed so they're on bed in time, you just tell us what you need. We're yours tonight. You let us know. You see, that's not someone that rages against wisdom. That's someone who embraces wisdom. Now, here's what's sad. You can isolate yourself and say, you know what? I get to play all the golf I want to play. I get to watch and binge watch all the TV shows I want. I get to do everything on my time. And you know what's going to happen after a decade or two? I don't know how long it'll take. But there'll be a time where you'll wake up one day and you'll say, wait a minute. Why does everybody else around me have deep, meaningful relationships in life, and I don't have any? Well, it's because we chose to isolate ourselves. And what we did was we raged against wise judgment. And in that, sure, we may have hurt others through our selfishness, but the one we've hurt the most through our selfishness is we've hurt ourself. Number two, are you a bad listener? Proverbs 18th chapter and verse 13 says, he who answers a matter before he hears it, you answer a matter before he hears it, it is folly and shame to him. So notice the description here. It's folly, it's foolishness. And he even goes on and says it's a shame. In other words, if you do this, you ought to be ashamed. Now, we also know from other scriptures that sometimes we do things that ought to blush our face, but we're calloused and we've grown cold to it. And so the question is, one, do we do this? And two, if we do it, do we at least catch ourselves and say, man, I'm ashamed that I did that? And it is simply to say, hey, I care about what you're thinking. I want to listen to you. You know what? You know what teenagers would love? Teenagers would love to have a mom and dad that would split their instruction time with listening time. Do you know what your children are really going through? Have you stopped and listened? You know what a church family loves out of elders? A church family loves when elders care about what's happening in their lives and they'll listen to them. You own a business? You have people that work for you at work? You know what they would love from you? They would love for you to listen and know what they're going through, so that if you're a parent or an elder or a supervisor or an owner and you're making decisions, which you do, that's the place of authority. And what they would love to know is that you care enough to know them before you make those decisions. I've sometimes wondered if it was just a North American thing, or if it was true elsewhere. And so several years ago, I was in El Salvador on a mission trip, and we were visiting the public schools there. And so you have all these beautiful, dark-haired and dark-complected teenagers. Most of them were probably about 17 years old in the room I was in, and they all have their uniforms white. I don't know how they get there's so much dust around there. How does the white shirt get any whiter? It's amazing. It's amazing. And then they all have either the navy pants or skirts on. And so I'm in this room, and I'm about to teach a Bible class, but leading into it, I'm talking a little bit about this, and I thought about this very fact I just mentioned to you. And I've talked with so many teenagers that, you know, that in their anger, they'll just be like, my parents don't care. They won't even listen to me. And it's a real problem. And so I thought, I wonder in this third world country if that's a problem as well. And so toward the beginning, you know, I'm speaking through a translator. Towards the beginning, I said something to this effect. I said, I want to ask you a question before I get started. And so they're all smiling, you know. And I said, how many of you wish that your parents would just listen to you so that they knew everything that you were dealing with in your life? And you know what they did? They just had this beautiful smile because it hadn't been translated yet. So then the translator says in Spanish, how many of you wish that your parents would listen to you so that they know what you're going through? And it was weird because, you know, I'm listening to this, and I'm hearing the translator say that, and it's like you just took this magic board. Every smile disappeared. Every smile was gone in an instant. And those 17-year-olders, every one of them put their hands straight up. Guys and girls, every one of them. We long for someone to listen before they would give an answer. It's a sign of strong leadership. It's a sign of true leadership. It's the example that Jesus taught us as he went about constantly taking time to spend time with other people as he led them. And so I want to encourage you. And this is much on, it's important, but it's kind of on the lighter side. This is just a little detail. I don't want you to lose in this little detail the big picture of how important it is for us to listen. But let me give you this just as something to think about. You know, how many times have you been talking with someone about something they really needed to know? And you realize they're trying to say something because their mouth is going like this. You know, and you realize they're just waiting for me to take a breath. And whenever I take a breath, they're about to say something. When you want to be like, you know, you ought to be listening right now instead of getting ready to talk right now. And you know, there's some people, they do it regularly. And one of these days, I'm going to get enough courage up. Here's what I'm going to do. When I see someone doing that, I'm just going to start like saying the ABCs. And I want to see how far I can go into the ABCs before they realize I've stopped talking. I bet with some people you could get to Z, and they're still going to be going. You know, what about if someone's talking to you, you press pause and listen. Don't think about what your response is going to be. Don't think about what you're going to say next. Here's what it comes down to. What if you and I could truly love and respect someone so much that we say, you know what, if you have something on your heart, I want to listen to you. Because honestly, one of the sharp signs of disrespect is to say, I don't care what you're thinking. I don't need to listen to you. I can make decisions in this family without you. I can lead this church without your input. I can lead this business without your contributions. Now, when you put it bold like that, you're like, well, that doesn't sound so good. Well, that's what this wisdom is about right here. How foolish and how shameful it is to think that people in your life don't deserve to be listened to. Notice the third one. Do you tell all that you know? Proverbs, the 12th chapter, verse 23. A prudent man conceals knowledge, but the heart of fools proclaims foolishness. So we've got foolishness here, the heart of the fool. Let's foolishness abound. What's abounding? It's the idea of, hey, let me tell you what I heard yesterday. Let me tell you what I saw this morning. And you say, well, what is a prudent man? You know, the idea of prudence, it's not this simple, but one aspect of prudence is that prudent people, and that's oftentimes simultaneous with wisdom. And so the wise or the prudent person will usually make a decision at the moment based on the long-term consequences. If you think about it, most of the worst decisions you and I have made in our life, notice I didn't say all, but most of the worst decisions you and I have ever made in our life, we make them based on short-term, and then we make that decision like, wow, long-term, that was a horrible decision. And yet you flip that over, some of the best decisions we make in life is when we make that decision long term. And we say, you know, right now, this is what's best long term. What's best long term in a relationship? Not telling everything you know. You know, some people, they see something and it's embarrassing to the person that it just happened to. And they immediately can't wait till they see somebody else so they can tell them about it. That's foolishness. That's the last part of that. That's the heart of a fool that proclaims foolishness. There's people that they just love the latest gossip, not just because they want to hear it, but they can't wait to go tell others the latest gossip. That's the heart of a fool that's espousing foolishness. And so we say, well, what does a prudent person do? It conceals. A prudent person conceals it. Do you realize you and I will see things or hear things most likely this week that there's no reason to ever repeat it? Just no reason. A new driver has a fender bender and they're very embarrassed about it. Why would you tell anybody? There's not even really a reason to go home and talk about it over dinner. Why would you do it? It's embarrassing to them. You will have people to tell you things in conversation where they are confessing how embarrassed they were or how sad they were. Why would you ever repeat that? Now, someone says, but wait a minute, we do need to be willing to confront. Yeah, Matthew, the 18th chapter, when there's sin involved, We have a responsibility, but then it's not to go talk to everybody else about it. It's to go talk to that individual about it. There are so many things that we see and know on a regular basis. Our mindset ought to be, you know, I'll take that one to the grave. I want to be a wise person. There is no reason to ever repeat that to anyone. Look at number four. Are you argumentative? Matthew, the fifth chapter, and I know this is not in the book of Proverbs, but this beatitude is written in a way that shares a lot of wisdom. And so I wanted to share this one with you. Jesus gives us the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God. Have you ever thought about the beauty and the power of peacemaking? Have you ever thought about there's a family where it just seems like they get together for holidays and they get along and it's beautiful. They can go through tough things as a family and they get along. It's beautiful. And then there's this family over here. They get together for holidays and it's kind of like a world war. And they go through conflict. And whatever conflict they go over, it's this big. By the time the family goes through it, it's this big. And you think, I'm going to pause here for a moment. Just give you time to land this plane, okay? What's the difference in two families? I'm not asking you to answer out loud. Make you think about it. What's the difference in two families? Now, let me tell you what a foolish answer is. A foolish answer is to say, well, some families, it just seems to be in their genetics that they get along and some families don't. That's baloney. It's not a genetics thing. You know what it is? This family has some people in it that make decisions based on wisdom from above. Peace. Makers. This does. You think about it at work. There's a department at work that people are always at each other's throat, and you go right down the hall or another floor, and there's another department that they seem to get along. What's the difference? I tell you, one has peacemakers in it, and the other one doesn't. You can be in neighborhoods. Some neighborhoods have peacemakers in them, and some neighborhoods don't have peacemakers. You say, okay, how's the best way to describe a peacemaker? Just transpose that. Who makes peace? What if I told you that this piece of wood here is just genetics? It ran in somebody's family. No, there was a furniture maker. Peacemaker? There was a furniture maker. The only reason this is here is because somebody said, you know what? I'm going to do everything it takes to make that piece of furniture. Some families have peace. You know why they have peace? Because there's a few members in that family that say, I'm going to do whatever it takes to make peace. Now, to make peace, you have to be willing to give up some rights. You can demand my way and everybody gets justice. Or you can say, you know what? Sometimes people are going to wrong me in my own family. That's a good time to turn the other cheek. Some people aren't going to pull their own weight in my own family. That's a good time to go the extra mile. You know what those people are? Peacemakers. They make peace. Let me give you an example. Especially when I was back at Mount Juliet, I did a lot of weddings. We had young couples getting married all the time. And so I did a lot of premarital counseling. Almost every week I was doing at least one session of premarital counseling. And so... as we would be getting into the year, getting close like to Thanksgiving and Christmas, I'd always think to myself, oh boy, that couple, they're about to find out what kind of family they're in, right? Because it hadn't dawned on them because they're going through this for the first time, right? And so they don't have the experience. And, you know, we've all been there. It's the first time it dawns on you, wow, we can't be at both parents' noon at Thanksgiving. And so you're like, hey, I'll just call mom, and I'm sure we can work something. Hey, mom, just want to call you. You know, Thanksgiving Day, we're supposed, you know, we can't be both places. And all of a sudden, there's this quick answer. Listen here, son, we've been doing five generations at this house. Thursday noon, Thanksgiving Day, and you will be here, and we'll see you then. Hang up the phone. And so, you know, looks at the spouse, says, I don't know what to do. So the other spouse says, Let me call mom. So they're both listening there. Hey, mom, we're kind of in a bind. You know, we can't be at both houses Thanksgiving Day at noon. Like, do you have any advice? Oh, honey, you know, what we're so thankful for is that we can all be together. It doesn't matter when it is. We can do breakfast. We can do late dinner. We can do Friday. Look, we'll make something work. What's important is that we get together. They hang up the phone and they look at each other and they say, I'm so thankful for her. Peacemakers. They make life better for everybody. I want to share with you the last one, drive home the point of all this. Proverbs 27th chapter, verse 14. Are you loud in the morning? Somebody just got an elbow in the rib. More than one of you did. I know you did. All right. Are you loud in the morning? You want to make people not happy about your presence. Are you loud in the morning? He who blesses his friend with a loud voice rising early in the morning, it will be counted a curse to him. You know, we're all born differently, right? I was talking to my daughter yesterday. I was with them yesterday morning, and her youngest, her little two-year-old, if she had her way, she would stay up to midnight and sleep to noon every day. She's only 2 years old. And my daughter looked at me and she said, "Isn't it amazing? Like, they're just born that way. Like, they're just born that." I said, "Yeah, they are." And so there's some of you that you feel like the best time of the day is around 5 o'clock in the morning. And you probably share a house with a lot of other people that don't feel that way. And so, you know, for those individuals that go in with a loud voice, my dad grew up on a dairy farm. And my dad thought about 4:45 was the best time of the day. And when his feet hit the ground in the morning, I mean, he was ready to go. I grew up on a farm, too. And dad would come into my bedroom, and he was a blue-collar worker. And so on Saturdays, we worked the farm on the evenings and Saturdays. And so he would come wake me up, and, you know, he didn't care. Now, Mom cared. He didn't care how late I stayed out on a date on Friday night, because he knew he was going to get me up so early I'd go to bed the next time. That was his mindset. And so he would come in and he would be like, "Hey, Dave, who won the football game last night? How's it going?" And I'd be like, Dad, can we talk about this later?" He would be in the kitchen and other end of the house from my room, and you could hear him, "Clara, what can I help you do at breakfast?" Slamming cabinet doors, and you would constantly hear her say, "Roy, you're going to wake everybody up." And even if we had guests in the house, when it was just family, and we're going to have guests in the house, she would literally say to it, "Roy, you have got to be quieter in the morning. We're going to have guests in the house, and you're going to wake everybody up." My dad, I don't say this lightly, what I'm about to say to you, he was the wisest man I've ever known. His godly wisdom far exceeded. He was on Solomon's level. He's an amazing man. Godly man. And he read a chapter out of Proverbs every day of his life. Most months, a lot of months, have 31 chapters. 31 days. Proverbs has 31 chapters. My challenge to you is, for the rest of your life, read a chapter of Proverbs every day, but read it saying, "What am I going to change?" This was back before the days of answering machines. Not just cell phones, before the days of answering machines. And one of those rare occasions where Dad and Mom were out and I was at home, that never happened because Dad always went to bed right at 8 o'clock. And so I was reading my Bible before I went to bed that night. I was reading in Proverbs. I was reading Proverbs 27th chapter. And I read verse 14. I did a double take. I'm like, "This is unbelievable. This is like my dad's book. This is too good to be true." And so if you're as old as me, you know in those days and time, beside the phone that had a cord attached to the wall, you had a piece of paper there and you wrote everybody's notes. "Hey, so-and-so called," whatever. And when you came in, you checked whatever messages you needed to know. And so I went to that place because I knew when they got in, they would check there. And I just said, "Dad, you got to read Proverbs 27:14 before you go to bed tonight. Circle it, underline it." Went to bed. The next morning, the house was silent. The next morning, the house was silent. Got married, bring my family back home, spend the night. The house was silent. There was a reason why my dad was so wise. If he read something in God's holy word, he followed it. I don't know why that verse always went over his head before that day, but once it was pointed out, he followed it. Listen, you can't say you're in pursuit of wisdom if you're not reading about wisdom on a regular basis and reading it every day to say, "What can I change today to be a greater reflection of the Lord?" How powerful our relationships will become whenever we interact with others based on who our God is instead of who they are. Thank you for the study together.